V-minus 82. GCC headquarters, Buenos Aires, Argentina. 3 hours after the news came in from Zanzibar, a heated crisis meeting among national representatives at the GCC was drawing to a close. For the most part, these representatives were in fact national leaders already present in Buenos Aires for the inauguration, rather than the permanent delegates who were set to reside in the city full-time. As if it was needed, this added an even greater feeling of unprecedented urgency to an already volatile political situation. The media had been dismissed from the building almost immediately, after a short statement from Godfrey which informed them of the supposedly alien triangle's discovery and of his intention to carefully assess the remarkably timed incident before making any further comment. The GCC was officially inaugurated behind closed doors with far more haste and far less fanfare than he had hoped, but right now there were far more important things to worry about. There had so far been little opportunity for careful assessment given how little footage and how few eyewitness reports of the triangle were available. The speed with which a swarm of ELF agents arrived from the Tanzanian mainland to close down the site at dawn was almost as suspicious as the timing, Godfrey considered, and he wasn't alone in his skeptical cynicism. Indeed, the majority of the emergency GCC meeting had been spent not debating the consequences and implications of a new gift from the messengers, but rather the most prudent way to respond to what all in attendance assumed to be an obvious hoax. Godfrey, commanding in his seat at the end of the table, insisted that the triangle was so obviously a cheap Chinese hoax that he didn't even have to say it. On that point, however, he decreed that for the time being, no one should say it in public. Some European delegates disagreed with his course of action in clearly stated but cordial terms, and Godfrey appreciated their candor. He also appreciated their deference to the will of the majority, which was a core principle of an organizational structure in which decisions by consensus could not be counted upon. The GCC Charter made it clear that comments directly relating to extraterrestrial contact or visitation would be issued only by the collective once approved by a simple majority of member states. This was an unbreakable tenet upon which the organization's credibility rested, and it appeared to be facing, and surviving, its first serious test far earlier than anyone could have predicted. A corollary of the individual member states' commitment to supporting the majority position was Chairman Godfrey's similar commitment to refraining from making any major statements without first seeking and securing explicit majority approval of their general content. A vote wouldn't be required every time he opened his mouth, of course, but any significant political interjection and any change of direction most certainly would require such approval. When the initial decision to avoid calling out the Zanzibar Triangle as a hoax had been reached, a victory for wait-and-see diplomacy, Chairman Godfrey rocked the room with a piece of news that came as a revelation to all but two of the gathered representatives. He glanced at these individuals, President Slater and the Japanese Prime Minister, silently seeking their consent to share the information on the tip of his tongue. Both nodded. The timing was right. "You all know about this morning's foiled plot at the Gravison," Godfrey said. "Well, yesterday mornings, since we're far beyond midnight now. In any case, what you don't yet know, and what has only been kept from you, so everything could be fully verified before we risked jumping the gun, is how the plot was foiled. On Friday evening in Italy, Dan McCarthy was contacted by the messengers. On Friday evening in Italy, the messengers went untold miles out of their way to warn Dan McCarthy precisely where and when the GeoSovs intended to strike." Sudden silence, rather than shocked gasps, greeted Godfrey's revelation. He watched with mild interest as delegates looked around and exchanged glances with their closest allies, subconsciously revealing friendships in the way only an unexpected development ever could. "There are several things we could read into this," their chairman said. "But the most objectively certain are these. First, the messengers remain close, keeping a watchful eye on humanity and ready to intervene when they deem it truly necessary. Second, the messengers quite rightly deemed the safety of our American and Japanese representatives worthy of such an intervention. Third, Dan McCarthy remains the messenger's preferred point of contact. Fourth, Dan McCarthy remains an individual we can rely upon. He may not have nailed his colors to our GCC mast quite yet, but when push comes to shove, his loyalty lies with his country and its allies. And stretching objectivity only slightly, Godfrey continued, allow me to suggest one more thing I believe we can safely conclude. Last year in Colorado Springs, the messengers did not intervene to prevent a near-deadly attack on Timo Fiori and Emma Ford. For one reason or another, their lives were deemed unworthy of an intervention. Of course, on the face of it, the potential assassinations of two heads of state may seem like a far more destabilizing blow than the deaths of two civilians. But if we cast our minds back to that awful day at the Fiori Frontieri headquarters, we will remember that the hopes of a desperate world were on Timo's shoulders as Il Diavolo drew ever nearer. The attack, even though ultimately unsuccessful, ushered in a night of chaotic rioting and could very well have hastened the decline of civilized society had Dan not bravely beckoned the messengers to Birchwood in the immediate aftermath. I remind you of this point to introduce another. In my view, the messengers acted not only to prevent two cold-blooded political assassinations, but to allow our inauguration to go ahead as planned. The sham that is the ELF will not have gone unnoticed by the messengers, and they have quite clearly chosen a side. Like Dan, they may not be public in their endorsement, at least not yet. But just like Dan, I know to the depths of my being that I can count on their support when it's needed most. To state my confidence in the simplest of terms, the messengers have never, would never, and will never give anything to the Chinese or any other enemies of freedom. The nods of support which greeted Godfrey's words were few but firm. Quite clearly, those who approved of his robust language and continued conflation of the ELF with the Chinese government fully approved. Some were less comfortable with the tone, perhaps hearing a little bit too much of Richard Walker in the Sinophobic wording. I would very much like to convene again tomorrow afternoon once more intelligence on this triangle is in our palms, but for now I shall close with a final comment on the importance of strategic restraint. As you all know, for my sins, I spent a considerable amount of time with Jack Neal before I cut him loose and he scampered away to the side of John Cole, birds of a feather flocking together as they do. The assembled representatives were surprised to hear these names spoken, especially Jack's and especially President Slater, who had given the disgraced founder of XPR his break as a political strategist. Jack had lost all of his powerful former clients and allies in recent years, falling firmly out of favor with Slater, Godfrey, and Cole, and foolishly making an enemy of his former protege, Emma Ford. Now that Jack was back in the commercial PR game, salvaging celebrity reputations almost as damaged as his own, more than one mind in the room wondered why his name had been deemed worthy of a mention in a meeting as highly charged and important as this one. You're probably wondering why I would mention him tonight, of all nights, Godfrey went on, attuned to the mood of the room. And the reason is simple. I'm reminded tonight of the one sensible thing Jack ever told me, which has stuck with me since the day he said it. You can hide the truth forever, but the lie always gets out. Many of the powerful heads around Godfrey's table nodded in full support. He commanded their respect without having to demand it, and not even those who disliked him in a personal sense were begrudging of his position. Friends, he said, we all know that this is a cheap Chinese hoax. What I also want you to know is that our counterparts in Beijing will overplay their hand and expose themselves before long. To paraphrase a far wiser man than Jack Neal, we must avoid the temptation of interrupting our enemies while they are making this mistake. Reality is on our side, and so are the messengers. For now, all we have to do is hold our nerve.